Stop complaining, Nobby. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying these trousers are a bit drafty, that's all I'm saying. They look good on you, though. And what are these tin bowls supposed to be doing? They're supposed to be protecting the bits you haven't got, Nobby. The way the breeze is blowing, I could do with some to protect the bits I have. Just try and act ladylike, will you, Nobby?
Which would be hard, Sergeant Colan had to admit. The lady for whom the clothes had been made had been quite tall and somewhat full-figured, whereas Nobby, without his armour, could have hidden behind a short stick if you attached a toast rack to it about two-thirds of the way up. He looked like a gauzy accordion, with a lot of jewellery. In theory, the costume would have been quite revealing, if Corporal Nobbs was something you wished to see revealed. But there were so many billows and folds now that all one could reliably say was that he was in there somewhere. He was leading the donkey, which seemed to like him. Animals tended to like Nobby. He didn't smell wrong.
"And them boots don't work," Sergeant Colan went on. "Why not? You kept yours on." "Yeah, but I'm not supposed to be a flower of the desert, right? A moon of someone's delight shouldn't kick up sparks when she walks. Am I right?" "They belong to my gran. I ain't leaving her around for anyone to nick, and I ain't mooning for anyone's delight," said Nobby sulkily.
Lord Vetinari strode on ahead. The streets were already filling up. Al-Khali liked to get the business of the day started in the cool of dawn, before full day flamethrowered the landscape. No one paid the newcomers any attention, although a few people did turn round to watch Corporal Nobbs. Goats and chickens ambled out of the way as they passed.
"Watch out for people trying to sell you dirty postcards, Nobby," said Colan. "My uncle was here once, and he said some bloke tried to sell him a pack of dirty postcards for $5. Disgusted he was." "Yeah, because you can get them in the shades for $2, said Nobby. "That's what he said. And they were Ankh Morpork ones, trying to flog us our own dirty postcards. I call that disgusting, frankly."
"Good morning, Sultan," said a cheerful and somehow familiar voice. "New in town, are we?"
All three of them turned to a figure that had magically appeared from the mouth of an alleyway.
"Indeed, yes," said the patrician.
"I could see you, Everyone is these days, and it is your lucky day. Sir, I am here to help, right? You want something? I got it."
Sergeant Colon had been staring at the newcomer. He said in a faraway voice,
"Your name's going to be something like Al Gibbler or something, right?"
"Heard about me, have you?" said the trader jovially.
"Sorta, yeah," said Colon slowly. "You're amazingly familiar."
Lord Vetinari pushed him aside.
"We are strolling entertainers," he said. "We are hoping to get an engagement at the Prince's palace. Perhaps you could help."
The man rubbed his beard thoughtfully, causing various particles to cascade into the little bowls in his tray.
"Dunno about the palace," he said. "What's it you do?"
"We practice juggling, fire-eating, that sort of thing," said Vetinari.
"Do we?"
said Colan. Al Gibbler nodded at Nobby.
"What does,
she,"
said Lord Vetinari helpfully,
"she do?"
"Exotic dancing," said Vetinari, while Nobby scowled.
"Pretty exotic, I should think," said Al Gibbler.
"You'd be amazed."
A couple of armed men had drifted over to them. Sergeant Colan's heart sank. In those bearded faces he saw himself and Nobby, who at home would always saunter over to anything in the street that looked interesting.
"You are jugglers, are you?" said one of them. "Let's see you juggle, then."
Lord Vetinari gave them a blank look and then glanced down at the tray around Al Gibbler's neck. Among the more identifiable foodstuffs were a number of green melons.
"Very well," he said,
and picked up three of them. Sergeant Colan shut his eyes. After a few seconds, he opened them again, because a guard had said,
"All right, but anyone can do it with three." "In that case, perhaps Mr. Al Gibbler would throw me a few more," said the patrician, as the balls spun through his hands.
Sergeant Colon shut his eyes again.
After a short while, a guard said, "Seven is pretty good, but it's just melons."
Colon opened his eyes. The Clatchian guard twitched his robe aside. Half a dozen throwing knives glinted. And so did his teeth. Lord Vetinari nodded. To Colon's growing surprise, he did not seem to be watching the tumbling melons at all.
4 melons and 3 knives, he said, if you would care to give the knives to my charming assistant Betty.
Who?
Said Nobby.
Oh, why not 7 knives, then?
Kind sirs, that would be too simple, said Lord Veterinari. I am but a humble tumbler. Please let me practice my art. Jugglers will tell you that juggling with items that are identical is always easier than a mixture of all shapes and sizes. This is even the case with chainsaws, although, of course, when the juggler misses the first chainsaw, it is only the start of his problems. Some more will come along very shortly.
Betty, said Nobby, glowering under his veils.
3 fruits arced gently out of the green whirl and thumped onto Algibla's tray. The guards looked carefully, and to Colon's mind nervously, at the cross-dressed figure of the cross corporal.
She's not going to do any kind of dance, is she?
One of them ventured.
No, snapped Betty.
Promise?
Corporal Nobbs's appearance could be best summarized this way. One of the minor laws of the narrative universe is that any homely featured man who has for some reason to disguise himself as a woman will apparently become attractive to some otherwise perfectly sane men with, as the ancient scrolls say, hilarious results. In this case, the laws were fighting against the fact of Corporal Nobby Nobbs and gave up. Nobby grabbed 3 of the knives and tugged them out of the man's belt.
I'll give them to his lord, to him, shall I, Betty?
Said Colon, suddenly quite sure that keeping the patrician alive was almost certainly the only way to avoid a brief cigarette in the sunshine. He was also aware that other people were drifting over to watch the show.
To me, please. Al, said the patrician, nodding.
Colon tossed him the knives, slowly and gingerly.
He's going to try and stab the guards, he thought. It's a ruse, and then everyone's going to tear us apart.
Now the circling blur glinted in the sunlight. There was a murmur of approval from the crowd.
Yet somehow dull, said the patrician.
And his hands moved in a complex pattern that suggested that his wrists must have moved through one another at least twice. The tangled ball of hurtling fruit and cutlery leapt into the air. 3 melons dropped to the ground, cut cleanly in 2. 3 knives thudded into the dust a few inches from their owner's sandals. And Sergeant Colon looked up into a growing, greenish, expanding... The melon exploded, and so did the audience. But both their laughter and the humour was slightly lost on Colon as he scraped overripe pith out of his ears. The survival instinct cut in again. Stagger around backwards, it said. So he staggered around backwards, waving his legs in the air. Fall down heavily, it said. So he sat down and almost squashed a chicken. Lose your dignity, it said. Of all the things you've got, it's the one you can most afford to lose. Lord Veterinari helped him up.
Our very lives depend on your appearing to be a stupid fat idiot, he hissed,
putting Colon's fez back on his head.
I ain't very good at acting, sir.
Good.
Yes, sir.
The patrician scooped up 3 melon halves and positively skipped over to a stall that a woman had just set up, snatching an egg from a basket as he went past. Sergeant Colon blinked again. This was not real. The patrician didn't do this sort of thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you see an egg, and here we have a melon rind. Egg, melon, melon, egg. We put the melon over the egg.
His hands darted across the 3 halves, switching them at bewildering speed.
Round and round they go, just like that. Now, where's the egg? What about you, Shah?
Algibla smirked.
It's the one on the left, he said. It always is.
Lord Veterinari lifted the melon. The board below was eggless.
And you, noble guardsman? It's got to be the one in the middle, said the guard. Yes, of course. Oh, dear, it isn't.
The crowd looked at the last melon. They were street people. They knew the score. When the object can be under 1 of 3 things and it's already turned out not to be under 2 of them, then the one place it was certainly not going to be was under the 3rd. Only some kind of gullible fool would believe something like that. Of course there was going to be a trick. There was always a trick. But you watched it in order to see a trick done well. Lord Veterinari raised the melon nevertheless, and the crowd nodded in satisfaction. Of course, it wasn't there. It'd be a pretty poor day for street entertainment if things were where they were supposed to be. Sergeant Colon knew what was going to happen next, and he knew this because for the last minute or so something had been pecking at his head. Aware that this was probably his moment, he raised his fez and revealed a very small, fluffy chick. "Have you got a towel? I'm afraid it's just gone to the toilet on my head, sir." There was laughter, some applause, and to his amazement, a tinkling of coins around his feet. "And finally," said the patrician, "the beautiful Betty will do an exotic dance." The crowd fell silent. Then someone at the back said, "How much do we have to pay for her not to?" "Right, I've just about had enough of this." Veils flying out behind her, bangles jingling, elbows waving viciously, and boots kicking up sparks, the lovely Betty strode into the crowd. "Which of you said that?" People shrank away from her. Armies would have retreated. And there, revealed like a jellyfish deserted by a suddenly ebbing tide, was a small man about to fry in the wrath of the ascendant Nobbs.
"I meant no offence, O doe-eyed one."
"Oh, pastry-faced, am I?"
Nobby flung out an arm in a crash of bracelets and knocked the man over.
"You've got a lot to learn about women, young man."
And then, because a Nobbs could never resist a prone target, the petite Betty drew back a steel-capped boot.
"Betty?"
snapped the patrician.
"Oh, right, yeah, right," said Nobby, with veiled contempt. "Everyone can tell me what to do, right? Just because I happen to be the woman around here, I'm supposed to accept it all, eh?"
"No, you just ain't supposed to kick him in the fork," hissed Colin, pulling him away. "It don't look good."
Although he noted the women in the crowd seemed to be disappointed by the sudden curtailment of the performance. "And there are many strange stories we can tell you," shouted the patrician.
"Betty certainly could," murmured Colon,
and was kicked sharply on his ankle.
"And many strange sights we can show you."
"Betty certainly, ow!
But for now we will seek the shade of yonder caravanserai."
"What are we doing?"
"We're going to the pub."
The crowd began to disperse, but with occasional amused glances back at the trio. One of the guards nodded at Colon.
"Nice show," he said, "especially the bit where your lady didn't remove any veils."
He darted behind his colleague as Nobby spun round like an avenging angel.
"Sergeant," the patrician whispered, "it is very important that we learn the current whereabouts of Prince Kadram. Do you understand? In taverns, people talk. Let us keep our ears open."
The tavern wasn't Colon's idea of a pub. For one thing, most of it had no roof. Arched walls surrounded a courtyard. A grapevine grew out of a huge cracked urn and had been teased overhead on trellises. There was the gentle sound of tinkling water, and unlike the mended drum, this was not because the bar backed onto the privies, but because of a small fountain in the middle of the cobbles. And it was cool, much cooler than in the street, even though the vine leaves scarcely hid the sky.
"Didn't know you could juggle, sir,"
Colon whispered to Lord Vetinari.
"You mean you can't, Sergeant?"
"No, sir."
"How strange. Hardly a skill, is it? One knows what the objects are and where they want to go. After that, it's just a case of letting them occupy the correct positions in time and space."
"You're dead good at it, sir. Practice often, do you?"
"Until today, I've never tried."
Lord Vetinari looked at Colon's astonished expression.
"After Ankh-Morpork, Sergeant, a handful of flying melons present a very minor problem indeed."
"I'm amazed, sir."
"And in politics, Sergeant, it is always important to know where the chicken is."
Colon raised his fez.
"Is this one still on my head?
It seems to have gone to sleep. I wouldn't disturb it if I were you."
You, juggler. She can't come in here."
They looked up. Someone with a face and apron that said barman in 700 languages was standing over them, a wine jug in each hand.
"No woman in here," he went on.
"Why not?" said Nobby.
"No women asking questions neither."
"Why not?"
"'Cause it is written, that's why."
"Where am I supposed to go, then?"
the barman shrugged.
"Who knows where women go?"
"Off you go, Betty," said the patrician, "and listen for information."
Nobby grabbed the cup of wine from Colon and gulped it down.
"I don't know,"
he moaned. "I've only been a woman 10 minutes and already I hate you male bastards."
"I don't know what's got into him, sir," whispered Colon as Nobby stamped out. "He ain't like this normally. I thought Clatchian women did what they were told."
"Does your wife do what she's told, Sergeant?"
"Well, yeah, obviously. A man's got to be the master in his own house, that's what I always say. So why are you, I hear, always putting up kitchen furniture?
Well, obviously you gotta listen to...
In fact, Clatchian history is full of famous examples of women who even went to war with their men, said the patrician.
What?
On the same side? Prince Arkvin's wife, Tistum, used to ride into the battle with her husband and, according to legend, killed 10,000 men.
That's a lot of men.
Legends are prone to inflation. However, I believe there is good historical evidence that Queen Sowawandra of Sumitri had more than 30,000 people put to death during her reign. She could be quite touchy, they say.
You should hear my wife if I don't put the plates away, said Sergeant Colon gloomily.
Now we are integrated with the local population, Sergeant, said the patrician. We must find out what is happening. Although an invasion is clearly planned, I feel sure Prince Cadram will have reserved some forces in case of land attack. It would be nice to know where they are, because that's where he will be.
Right. You think you can handle this?
Yes, sir.
I know Clatchin, sir. Don't you worry about that.
Here's some money. Buy drinks for people. Mingle.
Right.
Not too many drinks, but as much mingling as you are capable of.
I'm a good mingler, sir.
Off you go, then.
Sir?
Yes?
I'm a bit worried about Betty, sir. Going off like that. Anything might happen to her.
But he spoke with some hesitation. There wasn't much you could imagine happening to Corporal Nobbs. I'm sure we shall hear about it if there are any problems, said the patrician.
You're right there, sir.
Colon sidled over to a group of men who were sitting in a rough circle on the floor, talking quietly amongst themselves and eating from a large dish. He sat down. The men on either side of him obediently shuffled along.
Now then, how did you...
All right.
Anyone knew how Clatchians talked.
Greetings, fellow brothers of the desert, he said. I don't know about you, but I could just do with a plate of sheep's eyeballs, eh? I bet you boys can't wait to be back on your camels. I know I can't. I spit upon the defiling dogs of Ankh-Morpork. Anyone had any backsheesh lately? You can call me Al.
Excuse me, are you the lady who is with the clowns?
Corporal Nobbs, who had been trudging along gloomily, looked up. He was being addressed by a pleasant-faced young woman. A woman actually talking to him by choice was a novelty. Smiling while doing so was unheard of.
Right, yeah, that's me, he swallowed. Betty.
My name is Barna. Would you like to come and talk with us?
Nobby looked past her. There were a number of women of varying ages sitting around a large well. One of them waved at him shyly. He blinked. This was uncharted territory. He looked down at his clothes, which were already the worse for wear. His clothes always looked the worse for wear 5 minutes after he put them on.
Oh, don't worry, said the girl. We know how it is, but you look so alone, and perhaps you can help us.
They were among the group now. There were women of every legitimate shape and size, and so far none of them had said yuck, an experience hitherto unchronicled in Nobby's personal history. In a detached, light-headed way, Corporal Nobbs felt that he was entering paradise, and it was only an unfortunate detail that he'd come in via the wrong door.
We are trying to comfort Netal, said the girl. Her betrothed won't marry her tomorrow.
The swine, said Nobby.
One of the girls, eyes red with crying, looked up sharply.
He wanted to, she sobbed, but he's been taken off to fight in Gebra, all over some island no one's heard of, and all my family are here.
Who took him off? Said Nobby.
He took himself off,
snapped an older woman. Clothing differences aside, there was something hauntingly familiar about her, and Nobby realized that if you cut her in half, the words mother-in-law would be all the way through.
Oh, Mrs. Atbar, said Netal. He said it was his duty. Anyway, all the boys have had to go.
Men, said Nobby, rolling his eyes.
I expect you know a lot about the pleasures of men, then,
said mother-in-law sourly.
Mother!
Who, me?
Said Nobby, forgetting himself for a moment.
Oh, yeah, lots.
You do?
Why not? Beer's favourite, said Nobby, but you can't beat a good cigar as long as it's free.
Huh.
Mother-in-law picked up a basket of washing and stamped away, followed by most of the older women. The others laughed. Even the disappointed Netal smiled.
"I think that's not what she meant," said Barna.
To a chorus of giggles, she leaned down and whispered in Nobby's ear. His expression did not change, but it did seem to solidify.
"Oh, that," he said.
There were some worlds of experience which Nobby had only contemplated on a map, but he knew what she was talking about. Of course, he'd patrolled certain parts of the Shades in his time, the ones where young ladies tended to hang around without very much to do, and probably catching cold, too. But those areas of police work that in other places might be of interest to a vice squad now tended to be looked after by the Guild of Seamstresses themselves. People who neglected to obey the... no, not the law as such, call them the unwritten rules, as laid down by Mrs. Palm and her committee of very experienced ladies, attracted the attention of the agony aunts, Dotsy and Sadie, and might or might not be seen again. And Mr. Harris of the Blue Cat Club. His admission caused a lot of argument in the Guild, who knew competition when they saw it. But Mrs. Palm overruled opposition on the basis, she said, that unnatural acts were only natural. Even Mr. Vimes approved of the arrangement. It didn't cause paperwork.
"Oh, yeah,"
said Nobby, still staring at some inner screen. Of course, he knew what.
"Oh, that," he mumbled. "Well, I've seen a thing or two," he added.
Largely on postcards, he had to admit.
"It must be wonderful to have so much freedom," said Barna.
"Well,
Netal burst out crying again. Her friends fluttered around her.
"I don't see why the men have to go off like this," said Barna. "My betrothed has gone too."
There was a cackle from a very old woman sitting by the well.
"I can tell you why, dears. Because it's better than growing melons all day. It's better than women."
"Men think war is better than women?"
"It's always fresh, it's always young, and you can make a good fight last all day."
"But they get killed."
"Better to die in battle than in bed, they say."
She cracked a toothless grin.
"But there are good ways for a man to die in bed, eh, Betty?"
Nobby hoped the glow of his ears wasn't singeing his veil. Suddenly, he felt he'd caught up with his future. 10 damn pence worth of it hit him in the face.
"Excuse me," he said. "Are any of you Nubilians?" "What are Nubilians?" said Barna.
"It's a country round here," said Nobby. He added hopefully, "Isn't it?"
Not a single face suggested that this was so. Nobby sighed. His hand reached up to his ear for a cigarette end, but it came down again empty.
"I'll tell you this, girls," he said. "I wish I'd settled for the $10 version. Don't you just sometimes want to sit down and cry?"
"You look even sadder than Netal," said Barna. "Isn't there some way we can cheer you up?"
Nobby stared at her for a moment, and then started to sob. Everyone was staring at Colon, their food halfway to their lips.
"Did I just hear him say that, Fefal? What do I want to be on a camel for? I'm a plumber."
"He is the clown with the juggler. I think the poor man is several palms short of an oasis."
"I mean the bloody things spit, and they're a bugger to get up the stairs with your toolbox."
"Now come on, it's not his fault. Let's show a little charity."
The speaker cleared his throat.
"Good morning, friend," he said. "May we invite you to share our couscous?"
Sergeant Colon peered at the bowl and then dipped in a finger and tasted it.
"Hey, this is semolina. You've got semolina. It's just ordinary semolina."
He stopped and coughed.
"Yeah, right, thanks. Got any strawberry jam?"
The host looked at his friends. They shrugged.
"We know not of this strawberry jam of which you speak," he said carefully. "We prefer it with lamb."
He offered Colon a long wooden skewer.
"Oh, you've got to have strawberry jam," said Colon, carried away. "When we were kids, we'd stir it in and
he looked at their faces.
"Of course, that was back in he said.
The men nodded at one another. Suddenly, it was all clear. Colon belched loudly. From the looks he got from everyone else, he was the only one who'd heard of this common Clatchian custom.
So, he said, "where's the army these days? Approximately." Why do you ask, O full of gas one? Oh, we thought we could make a bit of cash entertaining the troops, said Colon. He was immensely proud of this idea. You know, a smile, a song, a lack of exotic dancing. But that means we got to know where they are, see?
Excuse me, fat one, but can you understand what I am saying?
Yes, it's very tasty, Colon hazarded.
Ah, I thought so. So he's a spy, but whose?
Really, who would be so stupid to use a joke like this as a spy?
Ankh-Morpork?
Oh, come on, he's pretending to be an Ankh-Morpork spy, perhaps. But they're cunning over there.
You think? A people who make curry out of something called curry powder, and you think they're clever? I reckon he's from Moontab. They're always watching us.
And pretending to be from Ankh-Morpork?
Well, if you were trying to look like a joke Morporkian pretending to be Klatchian, wouldn't you look like that?
But why'd he pretend to be from there?
Politics?
Let's call the watch, then.
Are you mad? We've been talking to him. They will be inquisitive.
Good point. I know. Feyfal gave Colon a big grin. I did hear the entire army has marched away to En al-Samhlasa, he said. But don't tell anyone.
Have they?
Colon glanced at the other men. They were watching him with curiously deadpan expressions.
Sounds like a massive place with a name like that, he said.
Oh, huge, said his neighbour.
One of the other men made a noise that you might think was a suppressed chuckle.
It's a long way, is it?
No, very close. You're practically on top of it, said Feyfal.
He nudged a colleague, whose shoulders were shaking.
Oh, right. Big army, is it?
Could easily be very big, yes.
Fine, fine, said Colon. Anyone got a pencil? I could have sworn I had one when I...
There was a noise outside the tavern. It was the sound of many women laughing, which is always a disquieting noise to men, usually because they suspect the joke's on them. Customers peered suspiciously through the vines. Colon and the rest of the crowd looked around an urn at the group by the well. An old lady was rolling on the ground laughing, and various younger ones were leaning against one another for support. He heard one of them say,
"What did he say again?" He said, "That's funny, it's never done that when I've tried it." "Yes, that's true," cackled the old woman. "It never does." "That's funny, it's never done that when I've tried it,"
Nobby repeated. Colon groaned. That was the voice and tone of Corporal Nobbs in storytelling mode, when wood could scorch at 10 yards.
"Excuse me,"
he muttered, and forced his way through the press to the gateway.
"Have you heard the one about the Sultan, who was afraid his wife, one of his wives, would be unfaithful to him while he was away?"
"We haven't heard any stories like these, Betty,"
Barna gasped.
"Really? Oh, I've got 1,001 of them. Well, anyway, he went and saw the wise old blacksmith, right? And he said,
'You can't go round telling stories like that, Corporal, Betty,'"
Colon panted as he lumbered to a halt. Nobby realised that a change had come over the group. Now he was surrounded by women who were in the presence of a man. A known man. He corrected himself. Several of them were blushing. They hadn't blushed before.
"Why not?" said Betty nastily. "You'll offend people," said Colon uncertainly.
"We are not offended, sir," said Barna, in a small, humble voice. "We think Betty's stories are very instructive, especially the one about the man who went into the tavern with the very small musician."
"And that was pretty hard to translate," said Nobby, "because they don't really know what a piano is in Klatch, but it turns out there's this kind of stringed..."
"And it was very interesting about the man with his arms and legs in plaster," said Nital.
"Yeah, they laughed even though they don't have the same kind of doorbells here," said Nobby.
"Here, you don't have to go."
But the group around the well were dispersing. Water jugs were being picked up and carried away. A kind of preoccupied busyness came over the women. Barna nodded at Betty.
Thank you. It's been very interesting, but we must go. It was so kind of you to talk to us." "Here, no, don't go."
A faint suggestion of perfume hung in the air. Betty glared at Colon.
"Sometimes I really want to give you a right ding alongside the lug hole," she growled. "My first bloody chance in years, and you..."
She stopped. There was a crowd of puzzled yet disapproving faces behind Colon, and things might have ended otherwise had it not been for the braying of the donkey from above. Thank you.